Hi, and welcome to Heard It From Her, a podcast from Lady Liberty, which is Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's project promoting women in media. I'm Emily Thompson, and today we're talking with RFERL Balkan Service correspondent Jasmina Lazic by Skype from Belgrade about her experience reporting from a refugee camp on the Serbia-Macedonia border. That's where she met several women who told her what they've been through to get to that point in their journey and what their hopes are for the future. Europe is still reeling from the news of a British exit from the EU, and irregular migration to the bloc was one of the key concerns of the Leave campaign. A tenuous deal brokered between the EU and Turkey at the height of the migrant crisis last year effectively closed the Balkan route, at least for now. But there are still thousands of people stuck in limbo in Greece and Macedonia, sitting in camps waiting to find out what their fate will be. Jasmina, who has worked for The Economist, The Washington Post, Elle magazine, and Serbian radio station B92, came to RFERL as a Jiří Dienstbier journalism fellow. And for her fellowship project, she went to the Tavanovce refugee camp in northern Macedonia in April this year to produce a short video documentary about the women living there. So tell me a little bit about some of the people you met at the camps. Why did they come to Europe? Where did they come from? And what did they experience along the way?
A thing I haven't expected when I entered a refugee camp is that I'm going to meet children first. Mm. After a few first steps, there were a bunch of kids all around me, and they were so happy and joyful and loud, and the little ones wanted to hug me, and bigger ones were interested in how camera works and everything. And I wasn't prepared for it. It was very touchy and very emotional, but somehow it just broke the ice. Mm-hmm. And then I entered the camp. I didn't have any idea how will I find anybody, because there was no circumstances to make a good preparation for this. It's just like, you know, like you're doing a vox populi, just random thing. So I was walking through the camp, observing what's going on, and I figured out that if there is no dead kids there, that camp would be a pretty sad, desperate, and quiet place, because they are running all around and making some noise and something is going on. So thanks to people who work in that camp, Tavanovci, where I was, and especially thanks to other migrants who speak English, I managed to meet some women and to meet my heroes of my stories, and to speak with them. Because, you know, it's very hard, and that's what I was counting on. It's very hard to convince any woman from Middle East, especially in these circumstances, to stand in front of the camera, sure, and tell you her story. And it couldn't be managed before. We couldn't just prepare it and order somebody just to come and stand up and do whatever I want.
Of course.
It just had to be a situation and a moment. And thanks to some people who are at the camp, I met. The younger one, Sumana Dervuş, is traveling with a part of her family. Mm. So she's in a camp with her mother, father, and brother, while one of her sisters is still in Aleppo in Syria, and the other one is in Germany. Mm. So all her family wants to go to Germany to join her sister. But Sumana, which is a hero, one of the heroes of the story, she wants to go to Sweden, where her fiancé is, and to get married. Mm-hmm. The other one, I believe that the bravest woman I ever met is Semina Afshar. She's a woman from Afghanistan who is traveling all alone with four kids, 9 months pregnant with fifth one. Mm-hmm. And she traveled from Afghanistan through Iran, Turkey, Greece, and got to Macedonia. She was traveling all by herself and with her children, with no money, as she told me, and she doesn't speak English.
Mm, this is unimaginable.
Yes, it is. And especially when you hear that she's not all alone in this journey just because she wanted so, but she's been left alone because her husband left her because of another woman. Mm-hmm. So this woman is, you know, at the same time, brokenhearted. And I believe she feels shame, because that's what I saw in her eyes when she told that. And there is a war at her home, and she needs to grab all her kids and, so pregnant, go somewhere. She doesn't know where. She has no idea out a world outside.
According to a November 2015 report from the UN Refugee Agency, the UNHCR, of the nearly 1 million migrants who arrived in Europe via the Mediterranean last year, about 24% were children and only 16% were women. The same report notes that women and girls face particularly high risk of violence, including sexual violence, from smugglers, criminal gangs, and other individuals along the route. All migrants face risks and dangers, but what are the added dangers faced by women in this situation?
Definitely. The biggest challenge that women and children are facing with on a day-to-day basis is violence. Violence in any step they make. It doesn't matter, is that violence from some other migrants, from even from border guards, but very often and very usually from members of their families. And that's pretty devastating because many of these women do not report domestic violence or any other kind of violence, whoever the perpetrator is, because they're afraid what's going to be the next step. Should they stay on a place where they have reported somebody who did something bad to them or not? They just want to continue their journey. And the thing that they do not report their husbands when they do that is that they are afraid that they're going to be more punished after that. That's a pretty big problem. One of my friends who worked in a refugee center in Belgrade, but actually in the south of Serbia it happened, she said that there was a situation when a man beat his wife in front of everybody in that camp. And nobody reacted. Nobody. Other migrants, volunteers, people around them, nobody. And when I asked her why nobody reacted, she said, well, you know, people just didn't think that it's okay to react. It's their personal thing. You know, it cannot be anybody's personal thing to beat somebody in front of you. And that needs to be stopped.
So there was really no infrastructure in place to deal with these kinds of problems. Do you get a sense that the response has improved at all over time?
I'm not sure. I believe that there is a goodwill and that there are some strategies to help. But I believe that, you know, it's such a big problem. It's such a huge problem. There are so many people, and politics has much more important topics, you know, than to deal with somebody's personal problems. And unfortunately, I believe that this thing like violence, disrespect and everything is being treated as personal problem. So there are many NGOs and many organizations who are dealing with children, with women, who are trying to help them. But as I figured out, many of them are not allowed to go into the camps, so that they cannot actually help these women face to face as much as they want to.
So it's kind of an organizational issue, yeah. And that kind of brings me to my next question, because there was justifiably, in my view, a lot of media attention paid to the assaults on women in Cologne. Why don't assaults on migrant women seem to matter as much?
I believe that reason number one is that these acts of violence on migrant women usually are not reported. You know, you cannot make a story if you don't know the facts.
Sure.
But I believe that the other reason is, you know, if somebody attacks women in Cologne, for example, or Berlin, or Prague, or Belgrade, especially if that somebody is a migrant, it's a juicy story. You know, here there are some people with different culture, with different everything. They came here, they made an invasion, and now they're torturing our women and children and It sounds good for everybody who doesn't want these people here. I'm not saying that that was the aim of the story in Cologne. Every violence needs to be reported, and it has to be a story about it, definitely. But I believe that violence on migrant women, we just don't know much about it. And when it happens, as I said, maybe people just think that it's their own stops between them.
When you were in the refugee camp, what was the most difficult part of telling these stories?
Well, the thing is that I thought it's going to be one of, you know, routine journalists' tasks. I knew what I wanted. I knew what I needed. And I thought that I knew where I'm going. So I expected that I'll just, you know, meet these women. I had my story in my head, how I'm going to build it, but I just needed their answers. It's not that I knew their answers. I just, you know, had idea how this should look like. But the thing that I wasn't counting on is that emotions. During three conversations, I just forgot that I'm a journalist. I just, you know, I just wanted to grab hand one of them and to hug her very strong and to promise her that everything's going to be all right.
Hmm. I can imagine it's difficult to maintain some kind of distance when you meet people like this who are in this kind of desperate situation.
Yes, it's very hard, especially if you know that these people now have nothing except hope and except patience, which is melting down because they don't know when and where will they move on.
Hmm.
And then you come there with some camera or something. You do stories with them and then you go back, you go home, you know, you have dinner, you have your family, you know where you are, where you're going to wake up, where you're going to sleep and everything. These people don't know that. And it's very hard to stay, you know, like a stone and super calm and everything after that. And basically these people, these women I met remind me actually that I should be very happy and very grateful on the situation I'm in now.
Sure. I think what you've done is pretty unique. There's not many people who really seek out the stories of women refugees and women migrants. Where did you get this idea from? Why did you decide that you wanted to focus on women for your project?
Well, you know, every day, like everybody, I guess, in this planet, every day I'm reading, listening and watching some stories or reports about migrants. But somehow I noticed that very rarely I can hear, read or see something especially about women or especially about children, except there is some big accident or something. Mm-hmm. So actually I figured out that I don't know basically nothing about these women and their everyday life now in these situations. And that I also have some prejudice about them, you know, because I don't know much about Middle East culture.
Mm.
And the thing is that I'm dealing with human rights issues and women rights issues for a long time. So I just wanted to get to know these women and to find out how their life looks like. What are their concerns? What are their fears? What are their challenges? What are their dreams? And their hopes.
Do you have any advice or tips for other journalists reporting on women migrants?
I'm not sure that I'm smart enough to give advice to anybody. I entered this just more with my heart than with my head. But yes, I don't know. I would just, not advise, but I would ask colleagues just to try to have more time and more interest in these topics. To turn in their hearts with their heads also, and to try at least to spend much more time in refugee camps to better know these women. And, you know, now I have material for many other stories when I met them.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have it before I met them. So I believe that we just need to be more interested in this topic. And to go there and to speak with these women and to do our best to pay attention on those who can help to help and on those who can provide this help to provide it.
You heard it from her. I've been speaking with Yasmina Lasic of RFURL's Balkan Service. I'm Emily Thompson from Lady Liberty. For more on women in media, find us on Facebook at /Lady Liberty RFERL. And I'll be back next time with another woman in media with a story to tell.